Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org, and podcasts of prior programs are also available there, as well as on the WDIY app and other streaming services. Today is September 28, 2022. The markets were up today, with the Dow closing at 29,683, the NASDAQ at 11,051, and the S&P at 3,719. Always nice to see a little green. Let's hope we can keep it for a while. Tonight, we are talking about tax planning before year end. Tax planning before year end. We're going to talk about a lot of things to consider. We are live tonight. We'll take your questions. Eric is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I'll do my best to answer them. The phone number is 610-758-8810. And you can talk live on air with us, or if you're not comfortable talking live, give your question to Eric and he'll write it down and bring it in to me. If you have questions that are more complicated or very private or confidential, you can certainly send an email through the website yourfinancialchoices.com. So again, tonight, tax planning before year end. First, what do we mean by tax planning and why before year end? Tax planning is the process of reviewing your income tax filing situation so that you can better plan or prepare for the management of your income tax liability. Let me repeat that. I, wrote this moments ago. Tax planning is the process of reviewing your income tax filing situation so that you can better plan or prepare for the management of your income tax liability. So that could be to understand it, know what it is, or perhaps better your income tax liability. So why before year end? We often call our tax planning year-end tax planning. You know, in the office, we're always saying year-end tax planning. And I'm saying why, let's call it instead of year-end tax planning, let's call it before year-end tax planning. And why do we say that? Because you're going to have more runway of planning opportunities if you start earlier. So we are already at September 28th. You have another October, November, December, another quarter to do some planning and preparation. So I'm going to give you some highlights of what to consider, what to think about. And sometimes many of us are just on autopilot. We just file our taxes. It's the same every year. We don't really think about it. Most people get stressed out about filing their tax returns and fearful and afraid and don't want the IRS to come get them. And I say, take control. Let's do it. And so let's start thinking about some of these things. There's a lot of moving parts in tax planning, or could be a lot of moving parts. And some people might think, well, you know, I just don't want to bother with that. I don't want to worry about that. And I have a little saying at work. I'm often saying to people, if you saw $20 on the floor, would you pick it up? What if you saw $100 on the floor, would you pick it up? If you saw $1,500 on the floor, would you pick it up? Well, sometimes if we can tweak or do a little tax planning, then we might be able to find some of that money. And it doesn't mean we're, you know, bilking the system or anything. It's about timing. It's about, you know, some saving strategies and, you know, taking advantage of some of the incentives we have within our system for saving for retirement, for investing in education. So there are incentives for us to do some of these things because, you know, theoretically it helps, you know, us all overall. All right. So what are some of the things we're going to consider? So I'm going to give you like a little menu. And then as we go through the show, I'll dig into them a little bit. And these are really highlights because it's so vast, you know, vast. I mean, vast, such vast amount of things we can talk about. So let's start with some of the punch list, which would be to consider in tax planning. Filing status is one of those things to get to consider. So filing status, and I'll talk about that in a bit. Dependents, do you have any dependents? What do dependents look like? Tax rates. Many people don't realize how tax rates work. They don't understand that there's, you know, tax brackets and that there's different kinds of income gets taxed at different rates. So we're going to talk about that. And that is really important for you to know in your tax planning. How about changes in wages, or if you have wages, are you paying attention to that? As we go through our lives, our situations change over time. And did we think about the impact of that? We go from maybe working and having wages to possibly having a pension or Social Security, or maybe not having a pension, maybe just Social Security. Do we revisit our tax situation before we go to file our tax return and realize, oh, shoot, I forgot I retired last year and I started taking this pension that had no withholdings on it. And, you know, I had all this other income on my return. And now what? No, plan before you make these changes so that you know what's coming or what opportunities you have for tax planning within this realm. So changes in wages, pension, Social Security, changes in withholdings. Some of the tax planning or tax projection that we might be doing is beyond your control, and some is not beyond your control. So there are certain things that might be beyond your control. If you're working, you have wages, you're not going to give up your wages to save taxes to keep that's what I always tell people. It's always better to earn money even after taxes because you'll have more money in your pocket. If you want to save taxes, then don't make money. And that isn't always the better scenario. So there are certain things that we can't have under our control. For example, if you start collecting Social Security, there may be some options for people to, you know, change that. But for the most part, once you start collecting Social Security, usually you're locked in. Again, there's some exceptions, which, you know, I don't think I'll have time to get into, but that may be out of your control. So that's set. Once you start collecting a pension, that's usually set. But we still might be able to control the taxation on some of these sources of income to some degree. So we will talk about that as we go through. What else do you have to pay attention to when you're looking at tax planning or doing tax projections? We need to understand tax withholdings and how tax withholdings work. And if you understand how they work, then you can be better prepared for what's going to happen on your tax return. I can't tell you how many times I've heard people saying, but they've already withheld the tax. I don't understand why I owe anything. My employer withheld the tax. How come I owe more? Well, we're going to talk a little bit about that. So understanding tax withholdings, payments that you make, estimates, tax credits, there are some things you are going to have control over. And these in particular are what you could have control over. So we're going to talk about that. We're already at our first break and I haven't even finished going through the punch list. So when we come back from the break, I will tell you some of the other items that we need to pay attention to when we're doing tax planning and projections. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and you can talk live with me or give your question to Eric and he'll write it down and bring it in. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100 or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1, also streaming live on WDIY.org and on the WDIY app. We are talking about tax planning before year end and the highlights of some of the things you want to think about. Take control, and you're going to love it instead of fear it. The phone number to call with questions is 610-758-8810, and you can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable doing that, give your question to Eric. He'll write it down and bring it in. 610-758-8810. So again, some of the punch list that I'm going to hit in what one might look at when they're doing tax planning or tax projections, and to try to get a grasp of understanding some of these factors that go into this. I've already mentioned filing status dependents, tax rates. I don't know if I had mentioned tax rates. Tax rates, there's different tax rates on different kinds of income. I'm going to talk about that. And then changes in your life, like wages, pensions, Social Security, withholdings, some things you can control, like tax withholdings, estimates, credits. Some other aspects of your tax return that you might want to understand in doing tax planning is portfolio income. What kind of income do you have on your portfolio? I've mentioned many times on the return on the show, I love looking at tax returns because it really just tells a complete story about folks' savings and saving strategies, and sometimes even their risk tolerance. It can really tell a story. So when I'm looking at a return and I look at the portfolio income, I'm looking at interest income. I'm looking at tax-exempt interest income. I'm looking at dividends. What kind of dividends? So changes in your portfolio income when you go from, you know, working all those years and spending all your money on new cars and homes and your kids and college, and all of a sudden, you know, 5 years later, you're saving, and now you have investment income, now you have interest and dividends hitting your tax return that you know, in prior years may not have had. So you can have those kinds of changes. It's time to review your return to see what that looks like and what kind of tax rates you have on it and how much of it can you control. Other types of income, which I might touch on briefly, rental income. You might have periodic income that you, for example, inheritances come up, you know, once in a while, not often, not regularly. So you want to make sure that if you have an unusual circumstance that you're planning ahead for that. Sometimes people get that reporting on a Schedule K-1, and that could be income that's getting reported to you, or it could be deductions getting reported to you if it's from an estate, for example. It's very helpful to understand what the impact is on your tax return for these things. And real quick, I'll just give a little teaser. For example, if someone has an estate and that estate has closed out and you're a beneficiary, a residuary beneficiary, there may have been expenses for that estate. There may have been attorney fees or executor fees, taxes that might have been paid. And in the final year of an estate income tax return, the executor can pass out these deductions to the beneficiaries. It's called excess deductions. And in prior years, you had to itemize in order to be able to take advantage of these and get that deduction. But in just recent legislation, you're allowed to take the excess deduction, most of these excess deductions, as a deduction on your tax return without having to itemize. And many people might not realize that. Even attorneys and accountants might not realize that. And you're going to look, because not all attorneys do estate work. That's what I mean by that. No offense to anyone. And then you look at the K-1 and you say, oh, you look at the codes and it's, oh, it's all deductions. Well, you know, I don't need deductions, or I don't understand what those deductions are. Or you might think, oh, I don't itemize, and I know you have to itemize. Well, that has changed. So make sure that you're paying attention to these items. So that was just one little bit about why it makes sense to pay attention to these various aspects of factors that might hit your tax return. So we talked other types of income. I mentioned rental income. That could be manipulated a little bit. And it's not really manipulated, I guess, just managed. Let me use the word managed. And then, of course, we have deductions on the tax return. If you're self-employed, there's a self-employment tax deduction. There's self-employed retirement plans that may be a deduction. If you have high deductible health insurance plans, you may have the opportunity to have a deduction for contributions to a health savings account. Then we have a standard deduction. We have a Schedule A deduction that may apply if it exceeds your standard deduction. You have IRA contributions that would be a deduction if you qualify for that. So you want to understand where the opportunities are for you. Then we have something called tax credits. It's very different than a deduction. A tax credit is actually an offset of the taxes that you owe, kind of dollar for dollar. Awesome. Lots of different tax credits. I'm not going to be able to talk about all of them tonight, but just be aware of them. For example, education credits. If you've got kids in college, undergrad, and there's education credits for grad school as well. Lifetime learning credits. Be aware of those. Foreign tax credits. Many people nowadays, if they are invested with, in mutual funds or broad diversification, you may have some international exposure in your portfolio. Chances are when you get your statement, you get dividends, and then quite often there's foreign taxes paid on those dividends. That is a credit against taxes that you owe. And many people might not realize that. They might think it's small. They don't, pay attention to it. They don't know how to enter it on the tax return or in the software, so they just ignore it. Remember what I said moments ago. If you saw $10 on the floor, would you pick it up? Sometimes these foreign tax credits aren't very material, but they're something. And it might be easier than you think to report these foreign tax credits. So there are many, many aspects of this punch list that I mentioned that can be managed or used in your tax planning. So let's talk about filing status for a minute. You really need to understand the filing status and what filing status you're using, because it impacts the tax rates, the standard deduction, other deductions that you may be entitled to. Filing status, very important. And you might think, well, that's a no-brainer, Lori, big deal. What are you telling us new that, we don't already know? We're married and we file married filing joint, or we're single and we file single. Well, there could be some people who are married who may not realize that married filing joint might be a more preferable filing status than married filing separate. I know someone in the family who did married filing separate when she married for the second time, because she just thought it would be easier for them to keep things separate. So first time marriage, married filing joint, bad relationship, get divorced, get into a new relationship. Hey, I'm going to protect myself now. We're going to keep everything separate. So they file separate returns. They still love each other, but they just thought it would be easier to file separate, not realizing that that has a lot of other implications to it. So just because you think it might be easier to keep things separate by filing separate, it may not be the best financial decision to file separate. And I'll talk more about that, just a couple little highlights, when we come back from our next break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and we'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Thank you to the members of WDIY for making all of our programming possible. Becoming a member is the best way to support your listening and to ensure we'll be here for the next person in our community to discover. The many choices and real voices you hear every day would not be here without your support. Make your membership gift today by calling 610-694-8100 or at WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You can also send questions through email at yourfinancialchoices.com, that website, yourfinancialchoices.com. We are talking about tax planning before year end and talking about some of the aspects of that. So in particular, I was just mentioning filing status. Now, let me tell you a little story about filing status. So I had said that some married people can file separately. And you can change your mind if you're listening now and you and your spouse have always filed separately and there's no other reason for it other than you thought it was simpler. You might want to have a tax preparer, your tax preparer, or go back into the software and say, what would the returns look like if we were married filing joint? So you can amend a return that was filed separately to now file joint. You cannot amend your married filing joint return to file separately. Okay? So married filing separate, you can amend to file joint. So if you have been listening and you think, gosh, didn't realize it might make a difference. Why might it make a difference? Well, one thing I want to point out, married filing separate, some credits, might not be available to you. Certain, you know, child tax credit calculations or I haven't even had anybody file separate in a long time, but the standard deductions are different. The tax rates are different. If you have something called the Medicare surtax, the thresholds for that are lower. So sometimes people think, well, if we separate our income and one might not pay tax and one might pay more tax, you know, the higher earner. You really want to see what else is impacted by it. I know in 2021, a lot of people actually benefited from filing separately to qualify for certain of the credits, the child tax credits. So there are times where it might make sense. One time where it might not make sense, and remember I said sometimes it's a disparity in income. So if you have one spouse who makes a little money and one spouse who makes a lot of money, maybe the tax calculation could look like it's beneficial in filing separate. But I had a case where someone looked at the calculation of tax savings on married filing separate, and it looked very attractive. And they said, before we file our return married filing joint, I see that we would save a lot of money married filing separate. Let's do that. So if you filed married filing separate, what else might have happened? Well, in this circumstances, these people were over age 65. So they saved a lot on income tax, but guess what they found out? There's something called the Medicare Part B premium that the monthly amount is impacted based on how much income is on your return. It's called the income-related monthly adjustment amount. And if you're married filing separate, it is a very, very low threshold. And the premiums on their Medicare insurance went through the roof. And it seriously outweighed the benefit of the income tax savings by filing separate. So in that circumstance, because they had filed separate, we could amend the return and file jointly. they did have to pay the little bit of the higher tax that they, you know, now did not save by filing joint, but they're getting back the Medicare premium hit that they had. All right. So you just have to be really careful about filing statuses. Head of household. Some people don't realize if they have, you know, children or a dependent in their home that they could file as head of household. There's lots of complicated rules around that. So you just want to make sure if you're single and you think you have a dependent in the home that you would qualify. There's certain criteria that you have to meet to qualify for that. But a head of household filing status has better tax rates, tax tiers, tax brackets than a single filing status. Sometimes you'll have separated parents or divorced parents or, you know, separate partners, and sometimes they'll take turns claiming the head of household filing status if they, you know, share, you know, the custody of the child or give that dependent status to the other spouse every other year. Sometimes they change that around. Some people don't realize that you can change the filing status depending on your circumstances each year. So I had mentioned dependents. Understand if that child is your dependent or is it your partner's dependent or your ex-spouse's dependent. Follow the criteria for that, but also understand what that criteria is, because you may be able to give away that dependent status to that other parent. All right, let's talk about tax rates for a minute. I don't know if people realize how tax rates work. Some people think, well, if I'm in the 22% tax bracket, I'm paying 22% on all my income. Believe it or not, people do sometimes think that, but the tax rates are tiered. So there are different tax brackets. So for example, a single person pays, you know, first of all, you get your standard deduction and or your Schedule A deduction. But if you have taxable income, so after those deductions, taxable income for a single person from zero to $10,275, it's 10% tax rate. Base amount of the tax is 10%. Then from 10,000 to 41,000, it's 12%. So there's tiers. It goes 10, 12, 22, 24, 32, 35, 37. And going back to single versus married filing separate, a single taxpayer is at the 37% tax bracket at $539,900. So they don't hit the top tax bracket until they make over $539,900. Whereas married filing separate, they hit that 37% tax bracket at $323,925. That's why it's really important to understand tax brackets and filing status. Now back to tax rates. So that's ordinary income, those tax rates, the income. When we look at your taxable income, we have a number. And some people might say, take this taxable income number and go over to the tax tables and calculate this out. Nobody does that anymore, actually. They use software or they hire someone to do it. But if you were doing your return by hand, you'd go over to the tax table and you'd take your taxable income and you'd see what the tax rates are based on this schedule. And they tell you how to calculate it out. But it's more than just that. You have to understand that there are different elements of income within that number, taxable income. What do I mean by that? So we have, when we look at page one of the tax return, we'll see wages, we'll see interest, we'll see dividends, we see rental income, Social Security, pensions, all of that different kinds of income. And most of that is ordinary income, and that will work then to go to those tables to see how it gets taxed. But what you can't forget is there is certain income on your return that is tax favored and does not follow that tax rate schedule. In fact, you have to do a special worksheet for qualified dividends, and if you have long-term capital gains on your Schedule D, if you still sell stock or real estate and you have these long-term capital gains, meaning you held it for more than a year, then there's some tax-favored treatment and you have to follow a worksheet to calculate that. But the capital gains tax rates are different. Remember I said the ordinary rates are 10, 12, 22, 24, 32, 35, and can be as high as 37. Well, the capital gains tax rates that apply to long-term capital gains and qualified dividends are 0, 15, and 20. I had someone the other day tell me, aren't capital gains all at 20? No, they're not. Sometimes they're at 0. So we'll talk more about that when we come back from our halfway point here. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Thank you, Sarit. This is, Lori, as he just said. We are talking tonight about tax planning before year end, and I'm trying to give you some highlights, some broad brush highlights of items that you need to pay attention to or could pay attention to if you're interested in doing tax planning and tax projections. And why would we care? Why would we want to do that? Because it could save you money if you understand how it all works. All right. So when we talk about tax rates, I mentioned there's something called ordinary income tax rates that's typically applies to your wages and interest and what we call ordinary dividends, pensions, annuities, Social Security. Capital gains tax rates apply to something called qualified dividends and long-term capital gains. And so let me just reiterate. Tax rates, ordinary tax rates, typically I would say a lot of people are in the 22 to 24% tax bracket. There are people who are in those top rates, as I mentioned. Married filing joint is at 22% between like $83,000 and $178,000. But if someone is in a 12% tax bracket or lower, ordinary income of 12% or lower, and you have capital gains within that bracket, they're taxed at long-term capital gains. They're taxed at 0. Qualified dividends taxed at 0 if you're within the 12% tax bracket. That could be really important to know, right? Now, when we talk about tax rates, I also mentioned there could be tax-exempt income. So tax-exempt income, interest income, might not be taxable for federal. It could be taxable for your state, depending on where that tax-exempt interest is generated from. So if you buy municipal bonds in your state of residence, then typically that interest would be tax-exempt for the state. But other states' municipal bond interest would be taxable if it's out-of-state residency. All right, so these are things that are important to know, especially for your state if you're in a high income tax state, to know what you're buying. We have a caller on the line. We have Carlos from Reading. Carlos, can you hear me?
Yes, I do.
Hi, how can I help you?
Hi, my question is this, right? I'm actually fell out taxes. Mary jointly.
Yep.
I do have a daughter, which is two years old, and I'll put it on my 32 form that I have just one dependent because my wife works too.
Yep.
So I would like to know what kind of deduction could I put on my tax return besides my gas receipts. Can I put the babysitter? What else can I put on my tax return?
No, Carlos, you're married filing joint with your spouse and you have a child together that you're taking as a dependent on your tax return. So if you're self-employed and working and you are, you know, driving to your job, to your clients or something, that is where you might get a deduction for mileage. But if you're taking your child to daycare, that is not a deduction for taking your child with the gas mileage. If you're paying for child care, then there's something called a dependent care credit. So there's a child tax credit for just having the child. You get a child tax credit, and they're talking about might they increase that. Right now, in 2021, they raised it to either $3,000 or $3,600. And in 2022, it's back to $2,000 for a child. It's a child tax credit. It offsets your taxes dollar for dollar. But if you're paying for child care, then you could also take a child a dependent care credit. That's another form you have to fill out called 2441. If you don't have an employer who allows you to put money away in a flexible spending account for dependent care, and you're just paying, you know, this child care out of pocket, then you could take a get a credit called the dependent care credit. And that, but that's limited as well. So is that kind of what you're talking about, Carlos?
Yes, but you see, I travel 1 hour daily to get to my job.
That's just, yeah, that's commuting, and none of us get a deduction for commuting, unfortunately. Okay. Yeah, unfortunately, we do not get a deduction for commuting. If you were working or working another job, they at one time, you could have maybe gotten some mileage, but they changed the tax laws back in 2017, and that would be considered a miscellaneous itemized deduction, and nobody's really getting that anymore. But if you're self-employed, you might be able to get a deduction for mileage that you have. But if you're working for an employer, then commuting doesn't count for any of us. I just drove from, you know, this morning 30 minutes into work, and no deduction for that for commuting. Okay, but make sure you're taking the child tax credit, and if you're paying for child care to an institution or a daycare or something like that, then you could get a dependent care credit. All right?
Okay, one last question. Uh-huh. I just need to know. Okay, my last question is, right, I work, my wife works also.
Mm-hmm.
Can I put her as my dependent, okay, or vice versa?
You're already, when you file jointly, you're already getting the benefit of filing joint. So she's not a dependent on your return in that situation.
Okay.
You're just married filing joint. You get the married filing joint tax rates, the married filing joint deduction. It's called the standard deduction. And we're not dependents of our spouse, so to speak.
All right.
Okay. Good
right,
luck,
thank
Carlos.
You.
Thank you for calling.
Thanks.
So, you know, some good questions, because I always say you don't know what you don't know, and the only way you find out is to ask questions. So that was really good. I appreciate people calling in. That's how, you know, I always say that's how I learn so much. So, for example, let me tell you something else I learned today that I did not know. And I've been around for a long time, and it's amazing how you still always learn things you don't know. And that is back to this married filing separate status. When we factor in someone has Social Security, Social Security gets taxed, included in our income, based on how much other income we have on our return. So if someone only is getting Social Security and they have no other source of income, none of their Social Security is going to be taxed. But if someone is still working and their spouse collecting Social Security and they're making, you know, $200,000 or something, their Social Security, the spouse's Social Security, would be included at 85%. So it depends on your how much other income you have on the return. I just learned this today and hadn't realized that there's a worksheet you have to do to calculate how much of your Social Security gets taxed. All right. We have software that automatically does it. I don't normally have to think about it. But that is if you're married filing joint, and if you're single, there's different thresholds that you have to, you know, be over or under when calculating how much of your social Security gets included. But guess what? Married filing separate and living with your spouse. Now, sometimes people are filing separate and still in the spouse's home because one doesn't want to leave. The provisional income is zero. So if you're filing separate and living with your spouse, then the amount of Social Security that's subject to tax is up to 85%. So little things like that. So that's why it's like, wow, you might not see that until you do a tax return or a tax projection. This is what I'm talking about. This is why we like to put these numbers in the return to kind of see you know, how they play out. So we talked about tax rates. I told you about zero. I want to talk about Social Security, that taxable Social Security up to 85%. So you understand that you could have Social Security that's included up to 85% on your tax return in your income if you have that much other income on your return. Well, you might say, Lori, well, how much control do I have over that, really? You know, like my spouse gets a pension, and how do I know, and how can I control my Social Security? Well, I've seen tax returns where the Social Security is not all included up to that 85%, not included because the pension was low enough. And then when you go through the worksheet for the taxable Social Security, you add half the Social Security to the pension, come up with what that is. Are you over the threshold, under the threshold? May not all be taxable. But then, oh gosh, we needed some money for a trip we were going to take. So we, you know, took a $40,000 distribution out of our IRA. Well, now you've just really thrown the income over the threshold, and now your Social Security is 85% included. Well, what might you have done? How could you have maybe planned for something different? Well, if I'm doing planning and I don't want to have all that income included, do I have other funds available that I could use that wouldn't put $40,000 of income on my return? Maybe you have a separate investment account outside of retirement accounts, and you could raise cash of $40,000 in such a way that you might not have a gain of $40,000 on your return. So maybe you look in your portfolio and you say, here's a couple positions that you know haven't really had any gains. Or maybe I have two positions. One has a $10,000 gain and one has a $10,000 loss. And you could sell those and then have no income on your return in my little story here. Hence, keeping your Social Security from getting hit and included up to 85%. So you want to think about what you're putting on your return, how much you're putting on your return, how much control do you have over your return. Maybe I don't have a Social Security problem. Maybe I don't have Social Security income, but I need some money out of my portfolio. Well, if I'm in a 12% tax bracket and I need some money and I could take it out of my retirement account or my IRA, or I could take it out of my investment accounts, I might be able to actually get some of these gains at zero tax. So we want to think about some of these things. So those are tax rates. What are the kinds of, income factors do we have to watch for on our tax return? And you guys, I could talk about a whole show just about tax rates. So I'm just trying to get people to think, to get you charged up to go do some planning and not be afraid of it. It could be fun. It's like a puzzle. It's a game. I love competition. And this could be really fun looking at your tax return. So we talked about, the filing status, the dependents, the tax rates, the wages I mentioned. Wages, what can I do about wages? Well, if you're working for an employer and you have a retirement account at work, this is going to give you a bang for your buck two times. One, you could put money in your retirement account and get a deduction if you're putting it on a pre-tax basis. You put money into your 401k, you're saving, bonus number one, yay. Bonus number two, it saves you income taxes today. Now, granted, when you eventually take it out when you retire, you will pay income tax on those pre-tax contributions. But there's also growth, and the growth is tax deferred. The income on the investments are tax deferred until you retire. And the hope is when you retire, you're going to be in a lower tax bracket when you have to start taking money out of your retirement account. So bonus number one, you save taxes. Bonus number two, you're saving. And a possible bonus number three is if your employer does a company match for the amount of money you're putting into your 401k, that is free money. Remember what I say at the top of the show, if there's $10 on the floor, do you pick it up? Well, if your employer is doing a match and you're not putting anything into your retirement account, you just walked past that $10 on the floor and Sarit's going to pick it up. So Folks, we are at our last break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We are talking about tax planning before year end and doing projections and touching on some highlights. So I said, how can we control wages on our tax return doing a contribution to a 401k? There's also something called the designated Roth, meaning you're going to make a contribution to a Roth through your work, through your employer's work. You're not going to get a deduction for that today, though. So it's not saving taxes today, but it will be invested and growing income tax-free for your future if you do it on a Roth basis. So that's also available to you. When would you do that? I would say you would do that when you're in a very low tax bracket, because the idea, the concept with a Roth is you put money in a Roth on an after-tax basis when you're in a low tax bracket in the hope that it's going to grow and grow and grow. And then when you're in a high tax bracket, you know, at some point in your life or when you're retired and have maybe other sources of income, you can pull from a Roth income tax-free, or you're growing that for your family, for your heirs. So wages, you can control your wages through the 401k contributions on a pre-tax basis. You might have a health savings account available to you if you have a high deductible health plan. Here's another tax planning note, and I'm not going to be able to cover everything I wanted to tonight, I can just tell. If you have a high deductible health plan, and we are seeing more and more of these, usually they're for, you know, younger people who aren't really having to go to the doctor a lot, and the premiums for your health insurance are a little bit less because you have a higher deductible. So you want to make sure you have money on hand. If in fact you ended up needing medical treatment, you have a higher deductible, so you have to have that money available to pay those higher deductibles, but your premiums are lower, right? If you have a qualified high deductible health plan, you have the ability to put money into a health savings account. Usually through your employer, they'll kind of go through some of these things when it's open enrollment and HR can talk you through. If you open a health savings account, you can put money into it to save for some of your health care expenses through payroll. Versus you paying it out of your checkbook, you do it through payroll, and how much you can contribute depends on your kind of plan. Is it a single plan, self-coverage, or is it a family plan? And for a family plan, for example, you could put $7,300 into a health savings account, again, if you have a high deductible health plan, save the income tax on that, federal, state, local, Medicare, and Social Security tax. It's huge tax savings to put money into the health savings account. The beauty of the health savings account is that that can move with you. You can keep it after you separate from employment. There is another tax saving vehicle for saving for healthcare expenses called a flexible spending account, a healthcare flexible spending account. You can't put as much into that as you can the health savings account, but that's typically for people who have something other than the high deductible health plan. So keyword, high deductible health plan. If you don't have a health savings account and you have a high deductible health plan, check that out. Get more information, look it up. You can do it through payroll deduction. Quite often, the employer also will put something in, so that's also more of that free money. So tax planning strategies that help you, but also may give you some free money from your employer, and then also lower your income tax bill. And then that health savings account, by the way, if you fund that and then you don't need the money and it builds up, you can invest it. And then the earnings on the health savings account are tax-free as long as you use it for qualified medical expenses. If you hear me shaking in my voice, it's because I'm cold, by the way. I just want to put that out there. I'm a little shivery right now. Got to bring a little jacket next time. So we can control our wages. We can a bit. So sometimes we think things are out of our control, but sometimes they're a little bit more in our control than we realize. Portfolio income, I already mentioned. I have a savior here. Someone's giving me a jacket. Thank you very much, Eric. Understand the kind of income on your return. Remember, I said ordinary income, and then look for your qualified dividends. Look for your tax-exempt income. Watch for K-1 reporting because that can make a difference. Deductions. We talked about the health savings account could be a deduction. If you didn't do it through your employer plan, you can't double dip. If you do it through your employer plan, it's kind of automatically calculated in your W-2. If you don't maximize it through work, you have an opportunity to still fund your health savings account up until April 15th of the year following your tax year. And then you get the deduction on your federal return. And if you're a Pennsylvania resident, you get the deduction on your state return as well. You're just not getting the local savings and the Medicare and Social Security tax savings, but you still would get something. So I have a lot of people who are catching up their health savings account by April 15th for the prior year tax return. If we knew about it ahead of time and you do planning and projections, you would see that you could do it through your employer and save even more. That's money on the floor. Tax credits, education credits, all kinds of different education benefits. There's the lifetime learning credit. There's the American Opportunity Tax Credit. What I say about the American Opportunity Credit, think in your head, four-year college, so your child's in a four-year. There are income limitations. So for married filing joint, the income phase out is at $160,000. But if you're page one income is $160,000 or less, and you have a child in college, then you may be eligible for this American Opportunity Credit. And I have people say to me, well, Lori, I have a 529, you know, college savings account. I just, you know, pay for it out of there. That's wonderful. And I love that you had that. But do you know that you can do a little bit of both? So we can't double dip on these education credits either, but we can coordinate the benefits. So we could use the 529 for certain of the education expenses, and then to qualify for the American Opportunity Tax Credit, if you're within the income limits, you could pay out of pocket $4,000 for tuition, and you're going to save $2,500 of income tax. So net, you were only out $1,500. Now you have a little bit more of that 529 money, or a little bit more money in your pocket, because you got a $2,500 education tax credit. All right, planning, projection, that's available for 4 years. Then, of course, there is the lifetime learning credit. That's 20% of expenses, qualified education expenses, up to $10,000. That's a $2,000 income tax deduction. My daughter has used that for her master's degree for the past 3 years. She's gone over time. So the American Opportunity Credit was available for 4 years. The lifetime learning credit you can use every year. And she had, her master's degree. She did over time. So she was able to use that lifetime learning credit for the tuition that she was paying for that, you know, and it was a decent amount of tuition. And then there, of course, there are some other education credits. I also want to point out, before I run out of time, about some other things that we can control on our tax returns. Oh, I mentioned the foreign tax credit. I think I highlighted that enough. If you have a foreign tax credit on your 1099, your consolidated 1099 on your investment income, just look to see if you're married filing joint and it's under $600 or single under $300, you don't have to file the Form 1116, which is the foreign tax credit calculation. It's a horrible form. Horrible. It's just Form 1116's, you know, it's nice to have software. But if you had to do it by yourself, it's really horrible. But if it's under $600, married filing joint, $300 single, you don't have to file it. You can elect to just take the foreign tax credit as a deduction on one of the schedules that come with the tax return. And which schedule is it? There's so many schedules now. I believe it is Schedule 3, line 1, part 1. It's a non-refundable credit, so it's really a credit against other taxes that you have, but it's, you know, dollar for dollar. So you, if it's under those limits, you don't have to fill out the form 1116, which could scare a lot of people. So that makes it a lot easier. But I also wanted to remind people about, you know, their tax withholding. So I said earlier, people will say, oh, well, why do I owe? I don't understand. You know, I paid my taxes, my employer withheld it. Don't they know how much I owe? Well, no, because they don't know if you got a bonus or, I mean, you got a bonus, but they might withhold 20%. You might be in a 24% tax bracket. They don't know if you have interest or dividends on your return or if your spouse has Social Security or pension. No one knows your tax rate till you're file your tax return and do the numbers. So you may not be withholding enough. You can adjust that, especially if you have two workers. So occasionally what I see happen is you might have a couple and one stays at home, maybe takes care of the kids, and then later goes to work. They fill out a W-4 and they say, oh yeah, I'm married filing joint, and they sign off, and the employer doesn't withhold enough because they think, oh, they're married filing joint. You have to let the employer know that you have a dual income household. So on the W-4, they've changed it now. It looks a little bit different. You do put your filing status, but there is a box that you can check now that says if there's two jobs, check this box. And that way, they're not going to give you the full standard deduction credit against just one income. They're going to kind of split it. So the W-4 is the employee's withholding certificate to change your withholding for your wages. There's a W-4P for pension, and they've updated this as well. I don't recall this in the past, that you can say if you have other income on your pension as well. Quite often, if someone's getting a pension, let's pretend $25,000, and they're married filing joint, well, the pension administrator isn't going to withhold any income tax. If they think you only made $25,000 and you have a $25,000 standard deduction, that would be zero taxable income. You have to give them a little information. So the W-4P, you can enter what other income you might have, or if there's someone else who's getting income. And many people don't realize that you can also have withholding on Social Security, and that's a W-4V. V is in Victor. And in this circumstances, no one is really calculating kind of the tax rate. They're given and it's fixed, and they don't care what other income. You just have to tell them what withholding you want, and it's 7%, 10%, 12%, or 22%. So please keep in mind that you can avoid surprises on your tax return and that you owe taxes by making sure that you've done your withholding. It's even throughout the year. It kind of spreads it out. You're not hit with like a $5,000 tax bill in April and you're panicked. You kind of smooth it out over the year by making sure you're withholding enough. So those are the highlights, just things to think about when you're doing tax planning, tax projections. It can make such a difference. It can be really quite fun to, you know, make sure you're taking advantage of any tax credits that are available to you and take advantage of tax rates that are available to you, or a way to make some of your income not taxable, like Social Security, by controlling some of the other income on your tax return. and making sure you're taking advantage of all the filing status and tax rates that might be available to you. Lots of information. Next week, we're going to have strategies in charitable giving because we start our pledge drive. So I like to talk about strategies in charitable giving. And that kind of nestles nicely with our talk tonight about tax planning projections and things like that, because you could plan for some charitable giving. I want to thank our listeners for listening tonight, calling in with questions. Thank you, Eric, for your jacket and for being here. Siri, thank you for being here. And coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.